Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we've got Marcus Baker here. Hey, Marcus.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going great. All right, so we've got Marcus here because his film Counterweight was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020. He was the writer and director, also producer, and Counterweight is in the Discover Indie Film TV series, season 4, episode 5. It's a great film. I love Counterweight, and it actually is in a great episode. I hope, Marcus, you got a chance to see that episode. It's Kids Don't Die and The Myth of Winter, and then your film, Counterweight.
Yeah.
All really unique, really original films.
Yeah. All great films. All great filmmakers.
Yeah. And I actually just learned that you have really good taste. Even before I hear the answers to your four questions, I'm going to surprise you for a moment.
Oh, boy.
To watch Counterweight today, I was actually on my laptop instead of the desktop, so I didn't have a copy of the film, from the Amazon process. I forgot to mention that if you want to watch this film, you go to Amazon Prime Video. That's right. Go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, and Counterweight is in that great episode, season 4, episode 5. I was on the laptop and I went on Film Freeway and I saw the lovely cover letter you wrote for your submission. And I must have seen it, last year. Cause I do honestly look at, I think a couple of us look at the cover letters, but you had attended, it said you attended the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2017. I believe you were there to see Tirachinas.
I believe it. Yeah. Because I listened to the episode as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you there because you were friends with Pedro Patricio?
No, I had moved to Los Angeles right around that time, and I was just trying to familiarize myself with the film scene and some of the film festivals, and I saw that, and I was a big fan.
Oh, my God. So you that's exactly why that film festival is supposed to exist anyway.
Yep.
Wow, that's fantastic. And such cool films, and
yeah.
I am very proud of that year and every year since. It's always fun to have. Well, so that's great. So you attended Sherman Oaks Film Festival and you saw cool stuff. And then basically in your cover letter, you said, hey, I saw cool stuff at your festival and I've made a cool movie that's a little different than most. So, your language was, by the way, listening audience, Marcus sounded a lot more intelligent than I am right now. Right now, I'm just kind of riffing and saying I'm paraphrasing a very well-written letter. So thank you for that letter.
Thank you. Yeah, of course. I'm glad to know that someone reads them. You put so much effort into something. And so it's always very rewarding to know when it's read and enjoyed at least.
It's so funny because, I try not to let them bias me because it should be solely the film.
Yeah.
Solely based on the film. But, and some nice words. Everyone's, can put someone in a better mood, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're in a better mood, the film's better. But so now we've discussed, I haven't given away anything about Counterweight, but everyone listening to this should make sure they watch it on Prime Video.
Yeah.
But what led you to be a filmmaker? We always like to start at the beginning.
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, when I started out, it really started out from a place of writing. When I was young, I always was writing. Even when I was, in elementary school, I was writing short stories, and Lord of the Rings was big at that time. And so, riffing on Lord of the Rings and the Star Wars prequels and all things like that. I've always come from a place of writing. And especially when I really started getting into film, which was in high school, especially a place of film criticism. The film that really made me want to make movies was The Dark Knight. I saw that in theaters and it blew my mind. I think I was 15 and it just woke me up to what movies could do. And so seeing that in theaters, I immediately went, okay, this is what I need to be doing. I want to make things like this that have the kind of social and political and emotional depth of films like that. And obviously my tastes have evolved since then, but I think for me, seeing something like that was immediately okay, this is what films can do. Films can make people feel this way. They can say all of these different things. And it was always wanting to come at film from a place of what can be said and what can be expressed.
So up until then, you were always writing. You were a creative kid, and you were writing, whether it was short stories or what have you. And then it was Dark Knight made you say, okay, this is the creative outlet I really want to pursue.
Yeah. So
did you start like writing screenplays or just doing your own version of writing for screen?
Yeah. I mean, I think I started writing scripts. I don't know how good they were, but I started writing, you know, little short scripts, and I wasn't like directing anything, but I was writing things in high school, and then as I got into, like, I didn't go to university, I just went to community college, but the community college I went to had a film program, and so I was able to go and continue writing scripts and continue working on people's projects and do things that way. And all the while, I was just taking in as much film criticism as I could. I really can't stress that enough, because for me, as much as I was able to get from watching movies and from class and all that kind of stuff, a lot of it was really just reading as much as I could at the time.
Right, let me hit you with two unrelated questions.
Yeah.
The first is, what part of the world were you growing up in? And then after that, the film criticism, were you searching it out like online, or were you finding film critics you agreed with and you're reading? Like, go ahead and tell me about what you mean as far as looking into film criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up in Bremerton, Washington, which is a small town outside of Seattle. And it's a small Navy town. So not a lot of film people up there. But for me, as far as film criticism goes, it had started with The Dark Knight. A big thing for me was that, there was such a hunger in the culture, to, you know more about what the next Batman movie was going to be, or what the next, like, Christopher Nolan movie was going to be, or anything like that. I latched fully onto that. And so I was reading all this news, and slowly that morphed into, like, reading different critics. For me, that was people like Emily Vanderwerf. It was, Priscilla Page. It was people, a lot of the writers over at, what was at the time known as Badass Digest, now known as Birth Movies Death, the Dissolve, writers at those sites, really just, and it started as a news thing, and it eventually morphed into, like, okay, I want to read this, like, 5,000 word article on, like, Jane Campion movies. And, you know, when I was in high school, I wasn't a great student. I couldn't necessarily, like, you know, my math homework was never flawless, but, you know, I could put down a 10,000 word article about the James Bond movies pretty quickly. So
it sounds also like reading this might have expanded what films you were watching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. A big formative, thing for me was, I read Emily Vanderwerf's series of articles on Sopranos, just reviewing it every other summer, as I was going through it. And it really, like, that was probably the first time that I'd read something that, like, expanded my entire understanding of what criticism could be. Obviously, like, obviously The Sopranos is pretty seminal as a television show. But her articles would not only talk about, like, the show, but they talk about the context in which it was made, the context in which, the context of the culture in which it came out in, and what was influencing it. And so it was really easy to just kind of, like, piece together different films and different articles and different things from reading one piece. And it really just expanded everything wide out.
Which obviously is a wonderful foundation to get into screenwriting and filmmaking at a school level, that you're already reading thoughtful analysis of the medium. That's really something.
And it gave me, I think the biggest thing it gave me, is an understanding of structure pretty early on. And a, an understanding of how structure and character tie together. And I think the place that I've been in now has really been trying to implement that for myself, as opposed to just reading about it. Cause I think when you're trying to do something, I mean, it's, there's that Daniel Day-Lewis quote. It's, the hardest thing to do is make something look simple or something like that. Yeah, it's definitely been really formative for me, to just have that kind of, that base.
All right. So at this, at the community college, did you get your hands on cameras? Did you, or did that take much longer?
Yeah. I mean, we had, it was a pretty small program. So we were shooting on like DVR tapes, like DVR tapes. And like, if you were lucky, you'd get your hands on like a Canon Rebel or something like that. And I had a friend that I had a friend that I was living with at the time, and we would go out and shoot stuff, with like the DVR tapes that we could rent from the school, the DVR, like little handheld cameras. And so we'd shoot like little short films and things like that. As far as like, I didn't like actually start moving into like seriously trying to make things outside of just like learning things until probably much later. I think again, like I said, a lot of my basis was really in writing and just trying to make sure I understood and knew what I was doing.
So were you screenwriting a lot?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been writing. Again, has always been the perspective I've been coming from. When I was in school, I mean, I was writing scripts for classes as well as writing my own things on the side. Even once I got out of school, I continued writing in some form or another. Again, I don't know how good any of those things are. I did go back and read something early that I wrote in like, gosh, like 2013, 2014. I read that, gosh, a couple days ago, just kind of in prep for this. And it wasn't very good, but you know, you're out there doing it. And I think that's the big thing, as long as you're out there doing it. And that can be really hard sometimes.
I think it's one of the funny things about writing is every maxim is annoying, trite, and true.
Yep,
and absolutely. Writers write. Writing is about writing, you know, and
yep.
And every brilliant writer has, well, it used to be shoeboxes full of pages they've thrown away, right? It's just there's a million terrible one-act plays, you know, written by famous screenwriters who you assume their first draft is always brilliant. You know, it's just writers are the hardest on themselves too, right? So
yeah. I mean, I've got a Google Drive that's nearly full of scripts. The biggest thing is just keeping at it, because you're never going to get better if you don't do it.
Well, and I'll tell you, I already want to congratulate you that you kept at it, because
thank you.
I've been around a long time. I'm no spring chicken, and I can tell you I've known a lot of writers who, whether they were talented or not, I can name a lot of people I've met who wrote one really good thing, mm-hmm. and then they kept rewriting that for 5 to 10, hoping that that would make them successful.
Yeah.
And it was like, no.
Yeah.
I mean, even at a cheesy business level, you have to walk into a meeting with a production company or an agent or a manager and say, here's 5 to 10 things that I have ready to go. Because if you have one thing ready to go, they've already said to themselves in the back of their mind, oh, so you're not a writer. You're just someone who wrote a script.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the big things for me, as far as just because so much of my education was based in criticism and not necessarily centralized the way that like film school would be. I was really pulling advice from all these different places. And so like one of the pieces of advice that I picked up early on was like, you need to have a bunch of different things. Don't spend, you know, 10 years working on one script and say, this is going to be the one. Cause you don't know what's going to be the one. You don't know who's going to want what at what time. You can just make the work and make what makes you happy and hope someone likes it.
Did you grab those famous screenwriting books and things, or?
I've read a few. I read I read Story, Robert McKee's Story. I didn't read Save the Cat. I've heard mixed things about it, so I've kind of held off on it. There have been a few others. I read Stephen King's On Writing. That was really good. There's one that I just cannot remember the name of right now. There have been a couple that have really been more character focused. I want to say there's one by the guy that wrote Ender's Game. I can't remember his name, but he wrote a series of books about writing characters specifically that were really helpful for me.
Excellent. Excellent. I mean, I guess I even asked that question just because you seem like such a thoughtful person that, and you were reading film criticism. So I assume once you got into this, you probably sought out material, sought out things that would, you know, almost screenwriting criticism or screenwriting. It's funny. The only McKee book I ever liked, I think there was one called Four Screenplays where he basically did like an analysis of four truly great scripts. And like one of them was Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
You know, cause it wasn't like him and his, what I might call, you know, a little too pat, like a little too, here's the cookie, here's the paint by number system. Exactly. But it was him showing you how, I believe her name is Callie Curry, like just how wonderfully written that script was. I thought that was, that was a good book.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think I've read that one. I think, and I will say to your point there, I think for sure the paint by numbers thing, or, I had one of my first teachers was very dead set on the idea that every script is the same and can be broken down into the same beats. And I don't think that's true. I mean, every story is different. Every story has different needs. And I think you just have to approach the story as what it is and hope that that's the right thing you can do. Cause again, that's all you really can do.
Absolutely.
I think coming at it from a paint by numbers perspective is probably not the right choice.
obviously. Well, you're writing and you're doing these classes, and then, did you make some films before Counterweight?
Yeah, a little bit.
exercises.
some exercises. Yeah. When I was in school, I made some shorts. And then when I got out of school, I directed a music video that was pretty rough. And then I started working in the film industry in Seattle just because I knew I wanted to write and direct, but I wasn't quite sure how to really get there. I didn't really know a lot about production because the only thing I'd ever done is write and direct. And so I started working in the Seattle film scene. And I was working on commercials and reality TV, and you know, you learn everyone's jobs, you learn the roles, you learn set etiquette, all those like really basic, really important things. And I made a bunch of friends that way. I did that for a couple of years, and then I moved to Los Angeles. And while I was in Los Angeles, I worked in post-production for a while, but I started to realize that I wasn't doing what I wanted to be doing, that I wasn't directing, I wasn't writing. And the hard thing about production, as much as I love it, as much as it's fun to like make things with your friends, is that it's time consuming and it just sucks up your entire life. And I really had no time for my writing, which is what I really wanted. And so I ended up leaving working in production, in 2019. Yeah, 2019. I went from that to just getting a day job as a barista at Starbucks. From there, I took the money that I'd saved working in production and I started trying to make one short film a month. I made one for January, February, March, and April. Right around May, I started to run out of money and was like, okay, I feel like I know how to make a film now. And I decided to take the rest of my money and put it towards Counterweight, which we shot later that year in August 2019. I made about four short films that I.
And when you were doing serious. One a month, was that because you had a nice little stack of shorts that you had written, or did you say, okay, I'm going to make one a month, so now I'm going to write ideas that are accomplishable on a small?
Yeah, I think that was definitely more the approach. I was. the goal was literally to write, direct, produce, and edit a complete short film in a month, which was a lot. It was a lot of work, but it taught me a lot. I learned so much doing it. But it was really just like, okay, I have a house, I can pay for food, and I have some friends that will probably work for free for one day. Like, what can I do with all of these resources? And so a lot of it for me was just trying to find things that worked within those bounds. And I was lucky to have great friends that supported me and were willing to work and were willing to help out. And it was a really wonderful experience. All of those short films are available online if you want to search them up.
For sure. Well, are they all, I mean, I was going to ask you, I already warned you that at the end of this podcast, we'll throw out websites, but as long as you want to name a website where someone can see your combined library.
Yeah. Everything for me is under Marcus Baker Film. You can look up Marcus Baker Film on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, anything on there. All of my stuff will come up. Vimeo, all those fun things.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Sounds fun. Yeah. Well, I've only seen Counterweight. But that's the only thing you ever sent our way. So,
Yeah. That was the one I felt best about. And especially like having been to the festival before and seeing like the quality of work at Sherman Oaks, I really felt like I had to make something that was really good. And I felt submitting it to Sherman Oaks felt like an achievement in its own way, just because I had so much respect for the festival.
I got to tell you, first, I have to say thank you. And second, I got to say, it's kind of weird that this thing we started, 7 years ago it's really nice and weird to hear that it actually holds a place in people's
absolutely
mental spaces but it is, I think it's a little special. So
it's a great festival. I can say that's for sure.
Well, and I'm kind of think we're going to be live again next year. Well, this year, in a couple months, we'll see.
You can't see it, but I'm crossing my fingers right now.
Yes, as am I. But Counterweight.
Yeah.
You decided, okay, I'm instead of making one a month, I'm going to wait a couple months. Mm. And is that because you had a script like Counterweight that you really believed in?
Yeah. So I wrote, when I was writing all those short a month, I wrote the first draft of Counterweight in probably February 2019. And I wrote it and I thought, okay, could I do this within the timeline? And the clear answer was no. and so I decided to set it aside and maybe come back to it later. And it became pretty clear that it was something I really wanted to put a lot into. It was a bigger script and it was more involved than the things I was doing. And I really cared about it in a way that, like, I think when you're just trying to pump things out, like, you approach it a lot differently. And so approaching the making of Counterweight was certainly more of, it was coming more from a place of, I want to make this very good, as opposed to, I want to, like, just make this and get it out there and show I can make things.
And once you finished that script, was it a quick shoot? Did it take 3 months to get all the pieces together? Cause I have to say, it's a lovely film. I mean, we can tell it's a one location film, but you make a lot of that location with looks and changes and different moments. Yeah. And it tells such an original story and such a, one of the things I love about it is the pacing, and from the very first shot, it gets interesting, mm-hmm. but you keep building on it from there. And I can tell now I get the film criticism thing because you actually you build, every element builds, whether it's the character building and us getting to know him deeper and the sound keeps growing.
Yeah.
And your use of all these elements, the handful of elements that are in a filmmaker's tool chest, they're all building throughout the whole thing right up into the end. So, So I'm curious if it took you 3 months to get a team together that could of friends together that could accomplish that, or, you know, or if you just like started and you used who you could get.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as taking more time for it, a lot of it was that, again, I spent a lot of money and, you know, I was working a minimum wage job. And so a lot of it was just having to like save the money and, be able to finance it myself. Cause I didn't want to go to outside help for something very small like that. And so a lot of it for me was taking that time to A, get the script right, because for me, that is the most important thing. That is the biggest asset, especially if you don't have a lot of money, is making sure your script is good and tight. And making sure that I had the money. And I had great friends that I reached out to pretty far in advance. And I just said, hey, I want to make this short this weekend in August. Would you possibly be available? And the friends that I had that weren't in production were like, yeah, I could probably do that. The friends that I had that were in production were like, oh, we'll see. Like, talk to me in like end of July. So, but yeah, I was lucky that everyone that came onto it because, again, it was just a labor of love for everyone, really.
And was it a one weekend shoot or?
It should have been 4 days. My cinematographer, Elliot Frost, who is amazing and extremely talented. I'm incredibly grateful to have worked with him twice and hopefully on the next one. We planned out 60 shots in 2 days, which is an absurd amount of shots. I think like what's the usual, like what, like 10, 15 shots, maybe max. Like, yeah, we were doing like 60 shots in 2 days, 30 shots a day. And it helped that we had, for anyone seen the film, I mean, there's a big oneer in the middle.
But it also looks like, it looks like a hard one to pull off. Like that was a lot of ballet.
For the camera
to move through a room with people in it, following an actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could have taken half a day.
Yeah. So we did 6 shots, 2 days. We did, all of this planning in the lead up to it. That was another reason we took so much time, is that Elliot and I wanted to, I'm big on storyboarding. And so Elliot and I were like planning everything well in advance. So when we got there, we could just run and gun, just, this is what we have to do. Let's go do it. And that was really how we went through the shoot over the course of the 2 days. As far as like actually shooting that big oneer, yeah, I mean, that was by far the thing we did the most takes of. I think we did 18 takes of it, and I think we only like fully got it maybe 3 times. And we took half a day shooting it. My friend whose apartment that we shot the short in, he was gracious enough to like, his landlord lived right next door to the apartment we were shooting in. And so he was gracious enough to like, go over and like, calm down the landlord when they were like, you guys are making too much noise, or, you know, why are you having a party at like 7 a.m. on a Sunday? Like, anything like that. It was for sure a very complicated shoot, but it was something that I couldn't be more proud of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's in my notes for you to let Christopher Messier know.
Yeah.
Because I looked at the credits when I watched it today, mm-hmm. and he's your editor, sound designer, and composer.
And
dear Lord, the sound design is fantastic.
Yeah.
And actually, there is some score that is fantastic. So he was composer. So, my goodness. And then he also was your picture editor, I assume. That's what it means by editor, which means he also did sound editing for you without even taking. But, I mean, those elements were wonderful.
Yeah, I cannot say enough about Chris. Chris is one of my closest friends. He's extremely talented in his own right, obviously. And we, at the time, we were living together, and we were just, once we'd finished once we had finished shooting the film, he took in all the stuff and he was cutting it and just doing everything for it. He is a one man post production team for this short. I was so grateful to have him. As far as like the actual music went, Chris and I had talked, the music and especially the sound design were really intertwined in a lot of ways. Chris is a big fan of Paul Thomas Anderson. I had cited, Punch Drunk Love, and especially the way that sound and score are used in that movie, as big influences on, this film, just because like the way sound feels like it comes out of nowhere, and the sound design in that movie especially feels just overbearing and overwhelming. And that was something that I really wanted to mimic. And Chris, being the Paul Thomas Anderson fan that he is, was very much like, yes, let's do this. And, I was very lucky to have him. I was incredibly grateful to have him. His support was monumental. I couldn't have done it without him.
And the effect you guys used where your lead character, when he spoke and it was staticky fuzzy, was that one that you two discussed and you told him your vision for it? Or did he come up with that for you? Did you say, I want it to be, you know, go ahead.
Yeah. We talked a good amount about different aspects of it. From the get-go, I was clear that like I want it to sound alarming and disorienting, because I think especially with sound, like sound is something you're not necessarily processing in the way that you are with visuals. I mean, with visuals, something might be off, but like you can't necessarily tell what it is. Whereas with sound, like it's obvious that there's something off. Like everyone can tell if there's something wrong with sound. and so that was our mindset on it from the get-go. But as far as like that static speaking, when he tries to speak and it's static, that was something we had discussed, and there were a lot of little elements like that where it was like, what is too far? Cause I think I was always inclined to, let's make this weirder. Let's make this, more disorienting. Let's make this, more confusing to watch. And Chris was always kind of pulling me back and saying, okay, but I think the audience needs this to hold on to, which is important, especially in something that has any kind of like surreal elements. You need those few elements to hold on to that are going to guide you through the story and guide you, especially through the emotional and thematic pieces of it.
Yeah. What you came up with just works. It just simply works. And it's
Thank you.
And it's such a great series of moments, because we're on this journey with your lead character. Mm-hmm. And then when he's unable to create an intelligible sound, you've just lifted the narrative to another level.
Yeah. And I think so much of that, it was interesting, trying to piece all that together, and especially cause so much of that was in the script. I mean, the script is, I think 10 pages, but a lot of this specific sound effects are listed. I mean, there's a lot that we found in post-production. But there's things like the static, or there's things like, there's a part where like a crowd cheers after someone throws a bottle on the ground, and like things like that were like all in the script. I just felt very lucky to have the team around me that was helping me.
Super. And so, and I believe you said, okay, so my short-term memory sucks. So you shot it in like the fall of 2019.
Yeah. So we shot it, 2 years ago. Probably, I think 2 years ago this weekend, actually.
Really? So a weekend in August.
we're recording this in the start of August. But we shot it in August 2019. Saturday and Sunday.
Was it one of those slow post processes? Because obviously, you have money or time, but both is,
We had time. We didn't necessarily have money. That's for sure. And again, Chris and I were living together. So, a couple nights a week, we would just get together and cut it for a couple hours and work out sound design. And Chris is also, in addition to being a talented filmmaker and everything else, is also a really talented musician. And so he was also like designing the score, and we'd be like sitting there at breakfast in the morning, and like, we'd be talking about video games, and then be like, "Oh, I'm going to go work on the score," and be like, "Okay, cool. Like, see you in a couple hours."
That's fantastic. So yeah, were you, when did you have the finished film?
We finished the film in December 2019. We started submitting, in January 2020. Which is perfect timing, I think.
Perfect timing, January, obviously you and I are both laughing. Maybe this will be heard 10 years from now when it's not on everyone's minds. But COVID was working its way around the country unnoticed, you were submitting to film festivals. I, as a film festival programmer, was seeing submissions come in to show. Have been the Film Invasion LA era, at the beginning of the year. And our final deadline was March 15th. And it was days before March 15th. Suddenly we were like,
oh man,
well, things are bound to be okay by June.
Yeah, exactly.
Like 2020.
Yeah. How bad could it be? Like, I think this will blow over in a couple weeks. Like,
so your entire festival experience was during lockdown, during pandemic lockdown.
Yes. Yeah. A lot. And I would even venture to say that a lot of my festival experience was getting refunds from film festivals that had suddenly had to cancel because of COVID. It was certainly a different, this is the first short that I had really put enough time and effort and thought into that I thought like, okay, I want to submit this to things. And so I'd done a lot of reading. I'd done a lot of prep and just like trying to prepare myself for like what it would be like to like go to a film festival, how to network at film festivals, how to like talk to other filmmakers, all that kind of stuff, just cause I haven't like done it before. And I still haven't. it was definitely jarring to suddenly see that window close. I mean, that's like, it's certainly different than like, it's certainly a very small problem amongst bigger problems, but it was definitely weird to have like, had to have it playing festivals and online, or, you know, I was fortunate that Sherman Oaks did like some like small networking stuff for filmmakers over Zoom and things like that. That was really cool.
That's true. We did Zoom, and we did have that one in-person mixer.
They did. Yeah. And I had moved back to Seattle by that
point. That's right. So you were out of town. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know some people were so desperate to see other humans, and in context, the festival was right before Thanksgiving. And of course there was a huge COVID spike after Thanksgiving. So we had an outdoor wearing masks festival mixer.
Yeah. Socially distant thing. Yeah.
And someone came in from Austin, Texas for it because she's like, honestly, I just wanted to be at an event.
Yeah.
Of course at this point now it's been a year and 6 months well, you'll get to go to Sherman Oaks in 3 months from now.
Hopefully so.
You're back in Seattle?
I am back in Seattle right now. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I moved back in the middle of the pandemic, which again, perfect time to move. A lot of it was just because of, you know, wanting to be close to friends and family, especially with everything going on. So it was, it's been a positive experience, but there's certainly things I miss about LA, and Sherman Oaks is definitely one of them.
Well, after we stop recording, I'll add something for you. So you had a festival experience that was fully virtual, and then did you keep writing? What was your, Lord knows the pandemic affected everyone differently. You probably might have shot a couple more shorts since Counterweight if there hadn't been a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I think I'm someone that very much, when I'm stressed out, I find it best to just keep my head down and keep working. And so, for me, I've been able to be very productive and I feel very lucky, to be able to do that. I've been able to write, a couple short films. I have written 3 features, and just like first drafts. So they're still like, you know, pretty early on. But I've written 3 features, and I'm going to tackle another draft of a feature starting probably next month, I think. And the other thing that I've been working on is just my next short. I'm going to hopefully shoot that in February if, you know, everything's safe. And I'm looking forward to doing that. It's coming down the pike, and I'm excited. I'm excited to really tackle something different. That's for sure.
February's got to be good. I know I just made fun of the fact that in March 2020, I thought June's got to be good. And of course, when we were forced to take Film Invasion Los Angeles virtual and do all the screenings online, I was sure that we'd be fine by November.
Yeah.
But once again, I'm sure we'll be fine by February. I mean, at this point, we just hit the target, right? That 70% of Americans that have at least one vaccination, and maybe by the end of next month we'll be. So yeah, we're getting there. I believe.
Keeping my fingers crossed.
And I'm very happy for you. I'm glad that you've been productive and you got to your writing during this.
Yeah. And again, it's been creatively fruitful. It's weird to say, but I mean, having worked at Starbucks throughout all of this thing, and, it's been kind of nice because it's nice to have that kind of social outlet, in a safe and socially distant way, as well as being able to like come home and focus on, and then pour myself into my writing again. That's for
actually,
sure.
This is a funny thing for me to add, but I, part of my heart will always miss the retail jobs of my youth I was a bank teller through college and then stayed on for many years after college. And I miss having like regulars and then different faces. I kind of miss that. I will forever miss that, you know, it would be a funny retirement job would be for me to like want to be the 70-year-old barista who's like, or working the cat. I'd be like, people would be like, are you okay? Why are you working the cash register at 70? And I'd be like, you know what? I worked a cash register from age 15 to 23, and I wanted to go out the same way. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to go out the way it came in. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a bad job. I mean, I think, like, again, it's I know for me, it's very hard just working in production or anything like that, and also trying to maintain any time to write, because it's just hard. It's really hard. It's 2 full-time jobs.
It's extremely hard. And also, production got punched in the face by COVID and stopped.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
All the people I know in the industry who their backup jobs were restaurants, bars, and gyms, those got shut down. So actually, Starbucks was like a shining light of not closing during this whole thing. They always seem to care for their employees. So yeah, they had systems to keep everyone from coming in.
That's for sure.
So yeah. I'm glad to know that you were safe and busy and kept your income through all this. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those stimulus checks go to a short film.
Oh yeah. Keeping them locked up nice, safe and tight.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think we can wrap it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it.
Sounds good. It was a pleasure. Marcus Baker, he already said, Marcus Baker Film is where you can look up all his stuff, whatever platform you're
Marcus
on.
Marcus Baker Film, yeah. Marcus Baker Film, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, anything like that.
And now I'm about to name a bunch of websites and all kinds of other crazy things for our outro. But first of all, Counterweight, Marcus's film. You should absolutely watch this really good, really original film. It's in the Discover Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. So you just go to Prime Video on anything, hopefully smart TV, so it's nice and big. You can watch on your phone, but Lord knows, people watching films on phones. Oh, it's hard.
Ooh. Yeah.
It's hard, hard for my generation to imagine watching anything on a phone. Mm-hmm. But go to Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film. There's four wonderful seasons, 10 episodes per season. And Marcus's film is actually batting cleanup in season 4, episode 5. It's the third of three films, three great films. And if you want to learn more about this podcast or the TV series, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on all the social media platforms, it's at DIFWins. And you heard us talk about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. You can learn about that if you go to shermanoaksff.com. And on social media, it's at shermanoaksff. And you heard me mention Filmvasion Los Angeles. That's the other festival I program. And you can learn more about that if you go to filminvasionla.com or at filminvasionla on social media. And none of my notes is something new. This is going to be the first words I say about this in public. But inspired by a little corner of films in Filmvasion last 2 months ago that were wonderful films that might be even better if you watch them with THC, which is legal where I live.
Yeah.
We are starting a third thing. There's Sherman Oaks Film Festival, there's Filmvasion LA, and now there's THC Cinema. If you go to thccinema.com or THC Cinema on Instagram and Facebook, instead of a big old festival that kicks my ass for a week or you get 4 months of ass kicking for 1 week at the theaters, we're going to make it a monthly movie night. Of films that are just really good when you're high.
That sounds like a good time. I got to check that out.
Right? And so anyway, THC Cinema is the last thing I'll mention. I'll thank Marcus again for showing up. I forgot one more ask. If someone's listening right now, give 5 stars. You know, go on all the things, and if you see the ability to give Marcus 5 stars, give Marcus 5 stars. If you watch the Discover Indie Film TV series, give it 5 stars on Amazon. I think you got to go to Amazon.com to rank things, review them. Most platforms, I don't know if you can put your review right in. And of course, hey, this podcast should probably have a lot of 5-star ratings. I haven't checked. Maybe it does, but I doubt it has as many as it should. I've had about, I think, 80 guests by now, and I have definitely not gotten 5 stars from everyone who's even been on it because I've never thought to ask. So now I'm asking, give 5 stars, be a kind human being and give 5 stars if you don't mind. And thank you, Marcus. And thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you for having me.